Blue Wire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Rebuild. I'm Henry Ettinger, joined by Jordan Blymack. Jordan, how are you doing as training camp is in its second week?
Second week. I think it'll officially be 2 weeks tomorrow, actually. So, yeah, right about 2 weeks, man. And it's one of those things where, like, it's all good and well, but it's too much of a tease. It's too much of a tease. Like, I just want the season to be here, right? Like, it's one of those things, like, you're so close to football, but you're not all the way there. Hard Knocks starts tonight, so, like, you get a little closer to football. But I just want it to be here. I want college football here. I want NFL here, and I'm ready to go, man. I'm ready for my Saturdays and Sundays.
Well, I think you're not the only one that feels that way. Browns practice was reportedly pretty chippy today as players seemed like they were a little bit more on edge than they had been in some previous training camp days. Maybe some spillover from the Orange and Brown scrimmage on Sunday. But
well, this is what they call the like dog days of camp period, right? Where you get into like that second week and like, all right, I'm tired of hitting the same guy every single day. This, that, and the other, like, I'm ready to hit someone new. So that Giants, you know, the Browns are going to have the joint practice with the Giants coming up here. And I think that's going to be huge for them just in terms of, you know, being able to hit someone else. And of course, the preseason with Jacksonville starting on Saturday as well. But you could definitely tell today, like you said, it got a little chippy out there. And that's just kind of everyone's tired of going up against each other every single day. It's one of those.
Definitely got that sense. It wasn't a New York Giants situation. As Jake Trotter put in the notes of training camp today, it wasn't quite like that, but it was definitely a little more physical than it had been. But Jordan, I think one interesting storyline that we haven't touched on a ton yet so far, and we should get to today, is the tight end position. Because one of the players that I think has disappointed a little bit so far in camp is Austin Hooper. And in particular, on that that scrimmage on Sunday, he had a couple drops. People, you know, and that's in general, he hasn't looked great at practice. And then he seemed to have a rebound day today. But I thought that group is interesting because you've got Hooper, who the Browns paid a lot of money to a year ago in free agency, made him the highest paid tight end at the time. Now, that was slightly deceiving because George Kittle and Travis Kelce were about to get contract extensions. But right. A lot of money for Hooper, nevertheless, for a guy that didn't really perform at that level or really even close to last season for the Browns. And then on the flip side, you've got, you know, his main competition at the position is David Njoku, who, you know, for being a first-round pick has certainly flashed at times, but on the whole has not necessarily delivered quite at that level of production either. Now, again, has shown the flashes, including in that Chiefs game where he was unbelievable. So this was, a potential battle, I guess, going into camp. You know, the Browns are going to play with two tight ends a lot. But what do you make of the tight end position? Do you think there's a case here where Njoku, you know, ends up playing a lot more snaps than Hooper does this season potentially?
I think this is a non-story. To be honest with you, I think it's one of those things where we're looking for things in camp. I think Austin Hooper, we paid him for a reason. I think we want him to be that guy. I think he will be that guy. I don't think that they're going to, like, you know, they look at these things and, you know, we talked to Andrew Barron, he talked about the full body of work. It's important to understand the full body of work. So I don't think that they're going to look into one day where Austin Hooper, and I saw the tweets and all that. I wasn't at the Orange and Brown scrimmage, but Henry, I did see the tweets of it. I guess he had two pretty brutal drops, kind of just in the open field, which, yeah, I mean, that's going to happen, right? I mean, to your question, though, of could you see David Njoku maybe getting more snaps than him in the season? I think they're going to be pretty split. I still think that they like Austin Hooper in terms of the run game. So I don't know if, you know, in terms of his run blocking, I think that he'll have the snap number just based off of that. Although Njoku got a lot better at blocking as the season went on last year, and I would assume is only going to keep progressing in that manner. But I don't know, Henry. I look at this as a non-story. You know, I've heard that Harrison Bryant has had a really good camp as well. He had a really good camp last year, and he still had his issues throughout the year when it came to holding on to the ball. I mean, that's going to be the main thing for him, if he's able to correct that or not. But yeah, I still think it's going to be the line share is going to go to Austin Hooper, one, because of his ability to run block, and two, I just think that they're not going to take into consideration, you know, he had you know, they'll go back to the orange and brown scrimmage if you would have caught those two passes. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I think at the end of the day, it's still going to be Hooper, probably 60-40 with Njoku, and, you know, Harrison Bryant will be sprinkled in there as well.
To your point, you know, Hooper, 370 snaps roughly last season, Njoku, 216. And then I think Harrison Bryant actually had more technically. Yeah, it looks like 307 in terms of pass snaps last year among those guys. But Njoku, an improved run blocker, I'm a little worried. I don't share quite this sentiment because Hooper was supposed to be the sure-handed tight end. Because to me, that's the biggest reason David Njoku's disappointed. He can't hang on to the ball. And Hooper last season also had problems hanging on to the ball for the first time really in his entire career. So the fact that he's struggling again, I mean, I don't think it's a major problem. But as I said, Kevin Stefanski loves to use 12 personnel. And I'm not super high on this tight end group. To be honest, I'm not really sure what Austin Hooper did to deserve that contract. You know, their PFF had some great stats about how in his last year in Atlanta, they didn't rate him that highly because he basically got 75% of his receiving yards just in zone coverage. Didn't really beat his guy and caught the ball in zone coverage, you know, basically sitting down, Matt Ryan finding him.
Yeah, but that was the reason for that was, I mean, they have couple guys out wide and Julio Jones and then, you know, the Calvin Ridley's of the world. And the Browns have a similar situation with Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. So I think the Browns looked at that. I thought they could apply it to their offense a little bit. He had a good year in Atlanta. He was a fantasy player. He put up stats. Maybe you can look further than that. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is he did put up stats in that last year in Atlanta.
No, that I'm not going to disagree with. My pause there was I don't think Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry command the same coverage on the outside, particularly because Landry plays in the slot. And now I know the Atlanta receivers move around a little bit, but to me, that's a different situation. To me, the Browns, at least, look, we talked about how Donovan Peoples-Jones is outperforming expectations, all of that, you know, that could change this season. But as of right now, I don't think the Browns are quite in a similar situation. So I'm a little worried. And, you know, I've just, David Njoku, I know is a darling of some fans, but I have not been that impressed with him despite his physical skills. Now the improvement as a blocker you mentioned was key last season. That cannot be understated. He got way, way better there. 100% got to give him credit. But Jordan, he can't hang on to the football. And that's a problem in this offense. I mean, his drop rate's gotten slightly better. But basically in the two seasons before last year, he was the worst tight end in the league at hanging on to the football. And if Hooper's also not going to be that sure-handed, I'm starting to get a little bit concerned.
Yeah, and the thing with Njoku, too, is he's that classic case, right, of, like, wide open, middle of the field, has a drop. But then he'll go up with, like, two guys draped all over him, make, like, a spectacular catch off of his helmet. He's that classic guy where he can make the difficult catch, but for whatever reason can't make the simple catch. I think he has gotten better, though. I think the main thing for him is going to be able to is staying healthy, right? I mean, because you talked about how Harrison Bryant had 307 snaps, I think you said, last year. That was 100% circumstantial. Hooper missed time last year. Njoku missed time last year as well. So I think they need the depth. I mean, they need three bodies in that tight end room. One, because you mentioned the 12 personnel. And two, just Hooper and Njoku need to prove that they can stay healthy.
Well, and that's the sneaky storyline, I think, is Harrison Bryant going to play himself and do some more snaps here? Because I thought he looked good as a rookie. And to go down the flip side of a reason to be positive, I thought Harrison Bryant was impressive as a rookie. And I know he wasn't meant to play as much as he did, but Harrison Bryant's a guy that I would not be shocked if he gets some more snaps this season, even if those other guys are healthy, if they're struggling. But I don't know how you see that dynamic playing. I mean, Harrison Bryant to me was just as good as those two guys when he was in there last season.
I disagree with that. I think that Harrison Bryant had a lot of rough moments last year. He couldn't let, look, if you can't keep the ball. If you fumble the ball that often, you just aren't going to see the field. And then that's the fact of the matter. And it got to the point last year where he was fumbling so often that you could noticeably tell when he would catch the ball, he'd go two hands on it and basically just go to the ground. He didn't want the contact. He didn't want the ball to get knocked out. And you could tell that it was in his head that he was thinking about not fumbling. And when you get into that case, sometimes it's hard to bounce back. But hey, I know he beefed up, right? He said it in his press conference today that he put on 13 pounds of what he calls good weight, which I think he's assuming to as he's saying that as you know, muscle growth. And good for him. I think that's what he needed to do, but we'll see that. The main thing for him is going to be a lot of, like, I think he's fine. He's okay in the run block game. He's okay in the pass game, but you got to hold on to the football. That's what it comes down to for him. And if you can't trust a guy to keep the ball in his hands after he makes a catch on the field, you just aren't going to see the playing. Aren't going to see the field. And if it wasn't circumstantial last year, I think he would have had some reps reduced for that reason. So we'll see how that plays into this year. I have faith that he can get better at that, but he certainly needs to.
Yeah, I looked it up. He only had two fumbles lost last year. God, it feels like it was more than that. But maybe they were just critical ones. I think
he only
ones.
Two lost. Yeah, but he definitely had – and there were two – a couple of them were critical, right? We're driving down the field, having a great drive to start the game, and then it's just the momentum killer. I do think he fumbled a couple more times, but we recovered. It just got to the point where, like, dude, just hold on to the ball.
Yeah, no, that's certainly a fair counterpoint. I don't know. And again, I think it stems from somewhat my disappointment with David Njoku. It's just that I'm looking for a solution at that position. So I think, you know, that fair counterpoint. But Njoku has the physical skill set to break out. We haven't seen it yet. He came in super young as well. He was one of the youngest players when he was drafted out of Miami. So there's still time for him, but I think the Browns are going to need either him to step up or a bounce back year out of Austin Hooper.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
To transition to a better subject, a much happier subject, Anthony Walker. He had a knee injury early on in camp, and the quotes weren't amazing in terms of Stefanski. Stefanski was super vague. It kind of felt like, oh, he might not be back for a while, all of that stuff. And then all of a sudden he was on the field today, Jordan. And so Anthony Walker back in Browns action today. I mean, he's critical for this team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's already been named the signal caller for that defense, which you expect in the inside linebacker position. So the main thing for him is going to be getting acclimated into, you know, the terminology, the schemes of that Joe Woods defense. But yeah, just to go back on that real quick, man, like, hey, Stefanski was super vague. Like, I was on this podcast, I've been on air with ESPN Cleveland saying, like, hey, look, I think it's at the point where we got to prepare for week one to not have Anthony Walker, right? I mean, that's just kind of how the comment was. I mean, Stefanski said, he's like, yeah, you know, he's going to take some time to come back. We hope to have him back before the end of training camp. And when you heard that, like, oh, this might be a little bit worse than we thought here. And again, if he came back like last week of training camp, last couple practices, you would think, all right, they'll probably give it to someone else who's more familiar with the schemes and terminology of the defense. But now to get him back at this point, Henry, I mean, that's huge coming over this new team. The other thing that I keep reminding myself about Anthony Walker, he's only 26. I don't know why, but for some reason, it seems like he's like 32 for some. Like, I saw it the other day. It was like, oh, he's 26. I thought he was like 30 something, but no, he's still young, man. And he still has some good days ahead of him. So to get him back, to have a legit inside linebacker for this defense is going to be huge.
They need him. The Browns gambled here. I was by no means in love with the linebacking core last season. And I was by no means in love with B.J. Goodson. But B.J. Goodson was productive for them. He was at least, you know, serviceable. And Anthony Walker did not have his best season last year, and they basically gambled on their evaluation of him being one that, hey, he's going to come in and he's going to be better than B.J. Goodson. Because remember, they signed Walker and chose not to retain B.J. Goodson when they probably, you know, pretty much had the choice between the two. So they made a gamble there, and that injury made me scared for a second, but it does look like ultimately things are fine. And on, you know, to provide a a positive look at it. I saw one of my favorite draft analysts, Benjamin Solak, who just signed with the Ringer. He said he was watching Darius Leonard film after the extension was signed for Darius Leonard. And he came away very, very impressed with Anthony Walker, saying that he thinks he might be able to stick as a three down player for the Browns and actually play in coverage, which is something he had done earlier on in his career. He just struggled more with last year. So, you know, potentially there's some room there. If Walker can show those skills in coverage and stay on the field for three downs, that's where he would definitely edge out what B.J. Goodson was able to give them.
Yeah, that's exactly. You hit the nail on the head. I don't want to echo too much of what you said, but his value is going to come in the passing game to me. And have a guy, you know, that speed and athleticism that can cover ground and zone coverage is going to be huge. There's one thing I did want to touch on before we signed off, Henry, real quick. I don't know if you saw, but the Browns did release, obviously, like I said, their first preseason game this weekend, this Saturday against Jacksonville. They did release their first official depth chart of the 2021 year. There wasn't really anything surprising, in my opinion. And the two guys at defensive tackle that we talked about the whole time, Malik Jackson and Andrew Billings, those guys were named the two nose tackles for the defense. Of course, Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney. The interesting thing to me, Henry, really the only thing on the whole roster, Greedy Williams, currently sitting at two on the depth chart behind Denzel Ward, Greg Newsome, and Troy Hill, 3 and 4. Your thoughts on that?
I was the one that came on the podcast and said, hey, if Greedy Williams is healthy, he's got the first round talent to compete with Newsome. That being said, I think this is a situation where they're early on in camp and giving the nod to the veteran more so than anything else. It sounds like that Greg Newsome has taken plenty of snaps for the first team guys as well, just based on reading the reports of the scrimmages, seeing what happened on Sunday, that he's been out there plenty, and that often he's been moved off the first team to test out Troy Hill on the outside and get him some reps there too. So I still think that's an open competition. I'm not going to say that Newsome's the favorite there by any means, but I think Greedy Williams gets the nod in game one because he's got the experience. He's kind of the incumbent guy, even though, you know, he was obviously out all of last season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Did we touch on Tack McKinley in the last pod?
Oh, we did not touch on Tack McKinley.
Yeah, we got to touch on that real quick.
This is major, Jordan. It sounds like he's away from the team and that he might not return for a while.
Yeah, no timetable is what they said.
That is, there's nothing other to say than it's a major problem if he's not able to return for the depth of that line group. But also, you know, you obviously hope everything's okay with him. It sounded like it was something, you know, personal. So you never know. You know, you obviously don't want to speculate in a situation like that. But as far as the on-field impact of the Browns, I know you've been much higher on his potential than I have, but if that's going to be the case and he's not going to play, then your guy Curtis Weaver might be might be getting some more snaps than originally thought.
Yeah, it's a really, really strange start to training camp for Tack McKinley, right? He missed, I think, 2 days from dehydration, which was interesting in itself because that's, you know, something that you can control in terms of getting fluids into your body. And it's not like the Browns were practicing in like 95 degree heat like they have been the past couple of days, Henry. When that happened, I mean, we were low 70s, high 60s those days. It didn't really make sense. And then then this news comes down. Like you said, I think it seems like it's more personal. So obviously you wish him the best, but it's a tough start, man, because, you know, and I think Andrew Berry's probably feeling the same way too, a guy that, you know, coveted Tack McKinley and wanted him here and tried to get him here multiple times, finally got him here. And then this happens, another, you know, fork in the road per se. It's just tough to see, man, because I would, like you said, I was high on him. I wanted to see why the Browns front office was so interested in him, what he could do to fit into this scheme. And now we don't know if we're going to get that opportunity.
I don't, who knows at this point. Again, it sounded pretty vague out of the Browns side of things. And that may be just to, you know, obviously be cautious when talking about something that's a personal issue. They certainly don't want to put an exact timeline on it when you don't know, but there's not a ton behind him. Just looking at the depth chart, obviously Porter Gustin, and then it's your guy, Curtis Weaver. And so it is disappointing because the Browns obviously took a chance on him. They wanted him last year. They didn't get him. They clearly thought he was going to be an option. I mean, there's been plenty of talk about Jadeveon Clowney sliding inside on certain, passing situations to get Tack McKinley on the field more in pass rush obvious situations where he can utilize his ability on the outside and the Browns can get their best pass rushers all on the field at once. But other than that, if he's not ready to go, I mean, obviously it's next man up. And right now, it's not a problem. But, I think we all know the injury history of Jadeveon Clowney. It could be one, and even Myles Garrett could be one that rears its head early on in the season if there's an injury.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we've, kind of been talking about all offseason, like having depth at that edge position. And this certainly puts, a hole in that depth. And we'll see. It's going to be, all of a sudden it's time for Porter Gustin and Curtis Weaver, those guys, to step up and show us what they got. It just sucks, Henry. I was really looking forward to it, and it was kind of bummer. That's really the only kind of bummer news to come out of training camp so far, which I guess is good for the most part, other than this Anthony Walker news. But it ended up being, he was completely fine. And maybe that's the situation like this is, right? Because they were super vague with Anthony Walker. All of a sudden, he's back in a flash. They were super vague with Tack McKinley. Who knows? Maybe we could see him tomorrow. Maybe we don't see him until week four. You never know.
You just don't. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that front. Other than that, I didn't see anything else with the depth chart that super jumped off the page to me. I know some people were pointing out that JOK was like a third string linebacker, but I think that's just, hey, he was on COVID reserve. He's on the practice a couple of times. So I didn't really see anything else worth discussing. But other than that, Jordan, I think we can wrap it up here. Just a quick one, after that Tuesday training camp, we'll be back, of course, with plenty more content. Browns' first preseason game is on Saturday as well, so we'll finally get to see the team in action against somebody else, which will be a nice thing for the fans.
Yeah, how much of that game do you plan on watching on Saturday? Because it's one of those things where I'm telling myself, going into that first Hall of Fame game, I was like, I'll check it out. And the next thing I know, I'd watch the first three quarters of the game. I've watched way too much Dwayne Haskins. And it's going to be Kyle Laletta versus CJ Beathard, man. And I'm ready for it. I really am.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I never know. For every regular season Browns game, it's like, okay, I have to make a plan about how I'm watching it. If for some reason I'm going to miss, the first 30 minutes, DVR setup, what do we got to do, et cetera. I don't feel that pressure with preseason, but then I also pretty much end up watching most of the game anyway. I turn it off probably in the third quarter, most of the time. But maybe with three games this year, maybe we watch the full thing. We'll see. I don't know.
It's a lot different too, right? Because we're not really watching it. We're watching all right, just please God, everyone stay healthy. In years previous, we were watching all right, is this quarterback going to be the guy? Is this running back going to be the guy? Let's watch this first round wide receiver. Those were the things. Now it's kind of just everyone get healthy.
That's a fair point, too. I definitely watched all of the preseason games when it was quarterback competitions.
Deshaun Kizer looked like Joe Montana after his first game.
Don't even get me started about Deshaun Kizer. I watched every minute of that training camp, and I was like, oh, my God, can this guy throw the football? And then you realized when the game turned on and he actually had to decide where to throw the football, you were like, oh. That's one of those where I'm like, man, I am glad I am not a scout. Because when I watched Kizer just throw the ball in practice, I was like, I was like, this is incredible. He can throw the ball to pinpoint 30 yards down the field on a rope. And then it was like, oh, but when they put the defense out there, that's a problem. Exactly. And I was like, right. Yeah, no. Deshaun Kizer was one of those where I was mesmerized and I was dead wrong. So oops. Yeah, it's why it's not an easy job.
You live and you learn.
You live and learn, and thankfully we don't have to worry about that anymore because we have our guy Baker Mayfield. So, all right, now we'll cut it off there after that nice Deshaun Kizer deviation. But Browns fans, until next time, just two words for you. Go Browns.